Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 47, and as usual, my name is Karen. Your name is Kristen.
Is my name usually Kristen?
I think it's usually Kristen.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I was going to make some philosophical question, but I am tired. So
we are both so tired today. I hope that we can get through this episode and it's exciting, but we're both exhausted. So
it's just been a long week.
Yeah. So you can get into contact with us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. We've got not that much news for you guys today, but a couple of pretty exciting things. So we're starting off first with Reed Riordan, who posted a couple of articles this week, and they were two very different articles, I feel like. One was OTP Timeline, so they did this for Annabeth and Percy. I don't know why.
I was going to say,
his name?
Do you have somebody else in mind? Like,
although the timeline has been filled with lots of Annabeth and other people lately.
Yes, I have seen a bit of that.
Which is always fun for me, but this one is about Hazel and Frank. Yeah, and they basically did another OTP timeline where, you know, we find out where they meet, we find out where their relationship goes, all the ups and downs, and where they've kind of ended up since then, so... let's see. At the end it says, unlike most of their fellow heroes of Olympus, these two are still heavily involved in the day-to-day running of Camp Jupiter. Now that Frank is finally free of his curse, we can only hope that the couple can take an extended vacation one of these days and truly enjoy their time together. Yeah. So, that's nice.
That does sound very nice.
And this next article, I kind of feel like I'm really excited for this character, and I feel like you might really like him. They posted an article that's basically titled Meet Boulder. I really want to make
a Boulder joke.
Yeah. Avatar.
It's the Boulder. Yeah. I don't even know what I'm talking about entirely.
You haven't gotten to the Boulder?
Well, it's been a while since I watched it.
Right. That is Avatar. Okay. For a second I was like, is that Korra?
Yeah. I think I remember meeting the Boulder, but it's been so long since I watched it's not present in my head.
Yeah.
That was an Avatar reference for any of those questioning. Yeah. If you have not watched Rewatchables Avatar coverage, go do it because there are so many inside jokes I didn't get until I watched some of Avatar. Yeah. So it's a good time.
Yeah, that was like peak Rewatchable, I think.
It was. You guys were in good form then.
Yeah. So this is just Boulder, not the Boulder, just Boulder, and it's Sirwa's spirit guide. And also lover of reality TV.
I mean.
And the gentleman here looks just like an amazing guy. And I just want to be his friend. And I'm really excited. This is a character from Sirwa. I don't know if I mentioned that. Again, brain is not on, you know, all cylinders today.
It's okay. We'll meet him soon.
Yes, very soon. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So that's cool. And speaking of Roseanne A. Brown, her birthday was just on August 26th. Wow. So that's really exciting.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I think she's doing pretty good for herself. And, you know, Sir was coming out soon. So I feel like that's a nice little birthday present.
Heck yeah. I have to say, this Boulder fella in this picture, he looks like a very jolly Santa Claus.
He does.
I would like him to come down the chimney. Yeah. So I'm just saying I think he's adorable. Anyway.
Big fans. You know what else I'm a big fan of?
What's that?
Rick Riordan Presents.
Really?
That sounded like such an advertisement. That would have been a good segue, though.
Yeah.
But no, I really actually do love Rick Riordan Presents. If that's not already been obvious through almost 50 episodes of this podcast, but we got some very, very exciting news. I ran out into the living room to tell Kristen this the other day as soon as I saw it. Basically, we have a new author joining Rick Riordan Presents. It's Sajani Patel, who has written, I believe, was it My Big Fat Indian Wedding?
I looked at the books that she's put out, and I think they're all, like, reimaginings of, like, rom-coms, because they've all got titles that are close to rom-coms that I've seen. Like, they're all off by a word, or they change a little bit.
Sleepless in Dubai.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, like, Sleepless in Dubai was one of them, yeah. So I think she's taken, like, some very common rom-com tropes and storylines and, like, adapted them for Indian heroes and heroines.
That's really
which
cool.
Which I love. So cute. I haven't read any of her stuff yet, but I really liked the titles and the covers and the whole idea is really cool.
So it says, now available, My Sister's Big Fat Indian Wedding, pre-order Isha and Unscripted, forthcoming Sleepless in Dubai, and Venom. And Venom is what we are excited about. It's called A Drop of Venom. Let me read the publisher's report here. Author of My Sister's Big Fat Indian Wedding, Sajni Patel's A Drop of Venom, pitched as a feminist reimagining of Medusa's origins, already on board, inspired by Indian lore, which follows a young serpent queen's rise to power and the slayer sent to kill her, questioning what it truly means to be a monster, to Christine Collins at Rick Riordan Presents in a significant deal in a preempt in a 2-book deal for publication in spring 2024. So, 2-book...
possible 2-book deal here.
Right, yeah. Which, I mean, now that could mean, like, a duology, but it could also just mean 2 different books.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sometimes they're related, sometimes it's just, we want you to write at least 2 books for us, kind of thing.
Is a preempt, like, the book isn't written yet?
Possibly.
Like, she pitched the idea, or, like, has an outline, or, like, the first couple of chapters.
Sure. I'm not sure, but that sounds right. Yeah. That sounds like it would be the idea.
I'm gonna look it up, because I feel like, okay, when a publisher wants to preempt, they're choosing to make an offer that will persuade the author's agent to take a project off the table early. The publisher is grabbing a project they love and avoiding having to compete with other publishers.
Ah, okay.
Interesting.
So they're putting dibs. They're calling dibs.
Yeah, they called dibs with a significant deal. Disney can do that.
Yes, they can.
They have the money to do that. So I'm really, really excited for this. I think it's so fun when we get new authors for Rick Riordan Presents. Of course, we just talked about Medusa recently and talked about how fascinating her tale is.
Oh yeah.
And the feminist, like, take on her myth and everything. So this one's gonna be, like, high up on my list
for sure. It definitely sounds really interesting, and I've never really thought long and hard about, like, Medusa's origins. Like, I know of Medusa and all of that, and we've talked about it recently, as you said, but I'm interested to see, like, how the whole thing ties into this Indian legend and, like, all of that. Like,
her being a serpent queen sounds very interesting. Yeah. And
I'm definitely excited. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be really great. Too bad we have to wait until 2024.
I know, it's okay.
Something else that's very exciting is that one of our favorite Rick Riordan Presents authors, Carlos Hernandez, who wrote Sal and Gabby, has joined the Marvel Comics world with an America Chavez story. So that's really, really cool. He tweeted, "So hi, I have big news. I am now a Marvel Comics writer." He was yelling that. "Specifically, I got to write an America Chavez story for the new Comunidades anthology coming out September 28th. So that's a month away. That's pretty soon.
Yeah.
Take a look. Also, I mention that I am a freaking Marvel Comics writer now. And there is a link. I'll put it in the show notes to the Marvel.com.
And for anyone asking, because you're a little behind on your Marvel, America Chavez is a main player in the Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness plot.
Yes.
So if you haven't seen that movie yet and you're questioning what the heck, who America Chavez is, you'll find out. So just in case you were kind of worried or freaking out right there. But that's exciting, because I really liked her character in that movie, so I'm interested to see.
And I think, and Carlos is so funny that I think that he'll bring, like, a really good sense of humor to that.
Exactly.
The link to the Marvel site is an article. It just basically says, "Your complete guide to this year's Marvel's Voices Comunidades number 1, and then talks about everything going on with these, so...
Hmm.
Yeah, I also really liked America Chavez in that movie, and felt like there was a lot more that could be said about her and stuff. Of course, she's been in the comics for a while now, so everybody who's familiar with her...
Everyone like me who's like, comics?
Yeah.
MCU?
We're we're more movie people than comics people in this household, but...
I appreciate the comics, but I did not read them, so I catch characters when it comes to the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
So, my first experience with America Chavez was in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see what Carlos does with her story.
And, I think it's going to be really cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, we are getting into our main discussion today, and that is our deep dive on Dionysus. And I was actually really excited to do this because I feel like I know some of the big things about Dionysus, but like some of the smaller myths and stuff I wasn't really as familiar with. And he's one of the few gods in the Percy Jackson series that is actually like around a lot. We see Poseidon a few times, and I would say he's probably, Dionysus would be like the first one we see the most, right? Like we see Mr. D most often.
Probably, because I mean, we run into Artemis, we run into Apollo, we run into like Ares on occasion. But I think Dionysus is, him being at camp, he's the one we see the most often and definitely the one the campers see the most often.
Yeah, he's way more of a constant in their lives. And so I find that really interesting. And I actually really, really enjoyed doing this deep dive on him because I learned some really cool stuff and things that I really had no idea were tied to him. So, hey, let's get into it.
Yeah.
So we're going to start off with him in Greek mythology first. And as always, I went through Percy Jackson's Greek gods to get all this information. And, you know, mythology changes depending on who's telling it. Right. So this is just kind of one version of it. But basically, so Semele, we've talked about her before a while ago, I think when we were talking about Zeus.
That makes sense.
Semele was vaporized while she was pregnant with Zeus's kid. So Zeus had to sew the premature baby into his thigh to keep him alive. Do you remember that?
Yes, yeah.
It's kind of a visual that stays with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And when he was ready to be born, Zeus undid the stitches and had, and the baby was totally fine.
Of course. You know,
perfectly well formed. Mm-hmm. And had Hermes take the baby down to Earth so Semele's sister could raise him. And so this is Aunt Ino, and Uncle Athamas. Zeus named the baby Bacchus, also known as the noisy one, because I think he was like crying a lot or something, and suggested that the aunt raise him as a girl so it would be harder for Hera to find him, because of course Hera's gonna be mad that Zeus had a child by another woman.
Right.
Bacchus grew at a normal rate for a human, so everyone assumed that he was a demigod, not a god. There was a lot of back and forth about, like, how he was going to develop and what was actually going to happen there. Yeah, because Semele was a princess of Thebes, and she was the daughter of Cadmus and Harmonia, and she was the only mortal to actually become the parent of a god, which is really interesting. Spoiler alert, Dionysus becomes a god.
Yeah.
Or is a god. But he did grow at a normal rate for a human child, so that's kind of interesting, makes him a little bit different.
Yeah.
When he was 3, Hera found out about him and found out where he was and attacked him. Zeus had just enough time to turn him into a goat so that she wouldn't notice him. What is Zeus's obsession with turning people into animals, turning into an animal?
Zeus has issues.
Yeah, I mean, we've made that clear so far.
Yeah.
Hera, unfortunately, so Hera didn't notice Bacchus, but she made his aunt and uncle go mad, and they killed both of their 2 sons. One of them was by drowning him in a like bathtub of boiling water or something like that. They were really horrific. I forget how the other one died, but it was, the father thought he was a deer, and so, like, shot him with a bow and arrow or something like that. It was pretty awful, yeah. So then, once they realized what they had done, they leapt off a cliff and killed themselves. So, whole family wiped out. Thanks, Hera. You're so great, being the goddess of marriage and family. Doing a lot of damage here.
Yeah.
So, from this experience, Bacchus learned that, 1, madness could be used as a weapon, 2, goats were good and became one of his sacred animals, and you can't hide who you are by putting on different clothes. And he actually became the god of anyone who felt confused about their gender, which I did not know.
I had
no inkling that this was a thing. And I tried to do a little bit of a Google search to, like, just see how the general world kind of interpreted that and, like, if this was a well-known thing. It's not in his, like, Wikipedia page. I tried to search for, like, gender, transgender, like, queer, anything to do with those, like, keywords.
Yeah.
And couldn't really find anything about it. But when you do, like, a regular Google search, there are, I don't know if it was, like, out.com, but there are a lot of, like, queer publications that talk about Dionysus being a god for queer people. And I was like, I had no idea. That's really cool. And I don't think that's ever mentioned or even hinted at in the Percy Jackson books.
I don't think so.
So I'm curious if that's something that they could possibly lean into in the show.
Yeah,
because, I mean, since then, obviously, Rick has written Alex Fierro from Magnus Chase, who is genderqueer, and I feel like Rick would probably know a lot more these days, and, like, with the team working with him, they could possibly, like, lean into that a little bit for Dionysus, but I mean, if it fits into the story, you
right.
know, like,
yeah.
which it might not, but it would be kind of cool. Maybe if we see Mr. D's kids, you know, they could be genderqueer or something like that. I would find that very interesting.
Yeah. No,
But yeah, I had no idea.
Or they have, like, a little, like, meeting for, like, the LGBTQ students
oh,
or something,
yeah.
and he's running it because he's like, you know, be you know, do your thing.
I would actually fall in love with Mr.
Right?
D right then and there if he did that.
And you can just picture Matsukis, like, running,
yes.
this, running this meeting.
Oh my god. I love that.
So, I mean, I don't know if they're planning on doing anything with it, but considering Rick's track record with trying to be inclusive,
yeah.
with the casting and everything that's gone on, I do think this is a perfect opportunity to kind of
yeah.
bring a little bit of that diversity into
yeah.
this series,
because you
too.
Can really tell that this first series isn't quite as diverse in a lot of different ways than, like, the newer series.
Yeah.
So for them to bring something into the show, I think Rick is very open to that idea. He's kind of talked about that before, so.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I would really love that if you ran the little, like, LGBTQ
club.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would be so amazing.
That's very cute.
That's so cool. Okay, so after that whole incident, to keep Bacchus safe, Zeus sent him to live with the nymphs on Mount Nyssa. And he became known as the godly son of Zeus who lives on Nyssa. Not very original. Which got shortened to Dios, god of Nyssa, a.k.a. Dionysus. Which I thought was really interesting. So I always assumed that Bacchus was the Roman version of Dionysus. But he actually starts off as Bacchus in Greek mythology and kind of also takes on Dionysus. And then the Romans just used Bacchus.
That's interesting, yeah.
He learned that he could crush any plant and make a drink out of it. Very useful. And he used to, like, go around doing, like, party tricks for people and doing that.
Because why not?
Yeah. One day he was out with his satyr friend Ampelos. Friend, I don't know. I didn't actually look into this. Could have been more than a friend. It usually is in Greek mythology, I feel like, but we don't know for sure. When he spotted a vine that he didn't recognize and he was super curious about, so Ampelos climbed the tree and fed the vine down to him, but then fell off the tree and died, which you saw that coming a million miles away. Dionysus was so distraught, he commanded the vine to bear the sweetest fruit to make up for the bitter loss. Very beautiful. And that's how he invented grapes.
Ta-da!
And then he also invented the wine press, which was two stones.
Makes sense.
And then he made wine. So there's that. And I wanted to point out that in this story, there's an older satyr named Silenos. Do you think it's the same one?
I mean,
or wait, is that, that was spelled with a U-S, wasn't it? Silenus in Percy Jackson?
I think it was Silenus.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, because I think I remember us pronouncing it.
It is. Yeah, U-S. This was O-S. But, like, it could be the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Honestly, I would be shocked if there were two satyrs And they were both older satyrs, and, like, yeah. they had... Either they're related, or they're the same one.
Right. I was going to say, maybe it's, like, it was, like, his great-great-grandfather. Right. But we also know that satyrs can live for a really long time.
Absolutely.
I don't know if they can live quite this long, but...
It could be. You never know.
If that's true, it makes the end of book four really interesting, where Dionysus comes out of the woods and basically tells Silenus to... shut up. And
yeah.
And, you know, like, he's voting for Grover.
Yeah, that would be a little...
There's a lot of history behind between yeah. them, if that were the case. So, making wine back then was a really big deal because the water could kill you because of all the bacteria in it. And because of wine, it killed the bacteria and therefore was safer to eat. If you know anything about history, you know that a lot of people...
That's why kids drink beer and kids drink wine. Yeah. Because it was the safest thing to drink.
And you would water it down and yeah. it wouldn't be quite as strong. I thought it was really funny that in these chapters, Percy, a.k.a. Rick, really drove home, like, drinking responsibly. And in this one paragraph, he was like, some people even thought they had visions of the gods if they chugged enough wine. Again, do not try this at home. You will not see the Greek gods. You may get a close-up view of your toilet as you are throwing up, but you will not see the gods. I was like... Been there, done that. Seen the toilet, never saw the gods. So
yeah, no,
that
no,
is
no god sighting.
True. Lots of toilet sightings.
Yeah.
Only a few.
Everybody has some crazy years.
Yes. Yeah. So Dionysus's followers consider themselves religious people. They called themselves the Bacchae, and partying was their way of going to church. And this was like a very real, intense thing. Like, I don't think any of the other Greek gods are treated the way that Dionysus is treated in this, like, religious sort of way, in that they really kind of throw themselves at the altar at his feet, versus everybody was, like, afraid of Zeus, and of course they wanted to, like, appease him and stuff, but it wasn't quite as religious as it is with Dionysus.
The only, like, I'm trying to think, I mean, there were temples to all of the gods or whatever. I do remember in Troy, the one temple was to Apollo, and they had, like, actual religious, like, figures in the temple caring for the sacrifices and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm sure there probably were other gods that had very, you know, devoted followers, but it does sound like Bacchuses maybe were greater in number and a little more zealous about their... Yeah,
that's a good word for it.
Yeah, a little more zealous about their worship and all of that.
Yeah, I think you're right about Apollo, though, because of the oracle and, like, the priestesses.
Well, and him and being the like sun that. God, I think it has a lot to do with it, because the sun gives them so much, and I can understand why Apollo would be one that has more of a more fervor and more people, you know, coming to him.
I always think back to, I think it was it 300 where they had that scene of what they would do with the women, and, like, I think they would, like, make them breathe in the smoke and it would, like, make them high or delusional. It was like some sort of psychotic, like, thing, and then they would have, that's how they would have the visions. Am I thinking of the right...
It might be the 300.
Yeah. I just remember that.
It wasn't Immortals, was it?
I don't think so.
I think it was the 300.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I saw it.
So yeah. I just always think of that and, like, just how intense they were about, like, the oracles in Apollo and stuff like that. So, yeah, kind of the same thing. So, his followers believed that he was destined to be the 12th Olympian god and suggested that he get the nearest king on his side to build a temple and make it official. Lycurgus was the king of seaside town at the base of Mount Nyssa, except they didn't realize that he was, like, a very evil guy who loved to whip people. I think they said that he made this whip out of, like, broken glass tied to, like, the ends of the whip, and he would, cut people. It was very, very awful.
Mm.
So Dionysus offered his knowledge of winemaking in exchange for a temple, but Lycurgus started whipping people and ended up killing Ampelus's mom. So Dionysus was very mad that now his satyr friend is dead and his satyr friend's mom is dead.
Yeah.
So as punishment, Dionysus turned the land barren and afflicted the king with madness and basically caused him to kill his own son. There's a lot of killing of your own sons in this
story. A lot of madness.
Yes. The town people revolted because they couldn't grow anything and quartered the king, aka tied his limbs to four horses and pulled them apart. Ugh. It's not a good way to go.
This is one of those things in history that I can't imagine somebody came up with.
Right? Like, how is that real?
Like, it's so gross, and I can't imagine actually, like, seeing it happen because, every time I do, I just go, my stomach goes flip-flop, and yeah. But that's not a great way to die.
It's not. I mean,
he was a bad guy, he was, you know.
So I'm not too sad about
it. No, but it's still gross.
It is. And they ended up building a temple to Dionysus. So he brought back the land. Everything was fine. Most places accepted Dionysus as their god. He kind of went on a world tour, had temples built to him all over the place.
I am Dionysus. How are you doing, Thebes? Like, I can just see him, like, coming out on stage and walking around the you know, the city center and like, how's it going, guys? Yeah, anyway, sorry.
Are you ready to rock?
Right? Yeah, I can totally see it. Anyway.
But King Pentheus of Thebes was skeptical, and so he ended up sneaking into the forest to watch one of Dionysus's revels. And the thing about these were, they were private. Like, you had to be a believer to be there. If you weren't, it was going to be very dangerous. And these revels were crazy. So they would listen to music. They would put on rowdy comedy plays. Dionysus had become the god of theater. They built bonfires and leapt through them for fun. These are getting progressively worse. They had wrestling matches to the death and more. Now, I'm going to say this as PG-13 as possible. Percy did not list what else they did, but I think if you know anything about, like, the Bacchanalia and stuff, they had a lot of sex.
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot of really crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so it got really intense.
Yes.
The Maenads were nymphs that got so frenzied that they felt no pain and had no self-control. I feel like this sounds a lot like berserkers from, like, Norse mythology and all of that. They became his bodyguards, and they were super strong and vicious.
Sounds more like them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Dionysus wore purple robes. He had a wreath of oak leaves. He carried a scepter called the Thyrsus, which was topped with a pine cone and encircled with grape leaves. And he caught Pentheus spying on the revels and had his Maenads attack him and tear him apart. And Pentheus's mom was there and actually took part in tearing him apart. Yeah, so that's how, like, I think this all kind of goes back to, if you drink enough, you're gonna lose all self-control, you're gonna be a little crazy, you're gonna be not quite as there as you probably should be if you were sober.
Yeah.
So all of that's going on. He ends up getting a lot of followers and everything. One day, he's on the beach going to the bathroom, and he gets captured by pirates. Percy made a great joke about, like, do gods have to pee? I guess they do, but I don't really want to talk about it.
Right.
So Dionysus gets captured by pirates, and he's very kind of laissez-faire about the whole thing and isn't super concerned because he's practically a god and his father is Zeus. And the pirates tried to sell him into slavery, and he's like, yeah, I don't like that. So he ends up defeating them by turning into a whole bunch of phantom animals. So he can turn into a bear, a tiger, a lion. There were a bunch more. I think he turned some of them into, like, dolphins and stuff like that. And this is apparently, like, the first time he ever tried doing that, and it just happened. So that's nice. He ends up arriving on an island called Naxos, where he finds a young woman crying. And this is Ariadne, who was dating Theseus, except Theseus had broken up with her and dumped her on this island by herself. And we kind of get a hint of this in the books where Mr. D talks about not liking heroes because of what Theseus did to Ariadne. They end up falling in love, and when he became a god, she became his immortal queen, though he still had some flings with other people.
These dang gods.
Yeah, exactly. One of the really, really interesting things for me is that Dionysus ended up invading India. Which, if you're looking at this from a historical and cultural point of view, like the Greeks and the Indians kind of coming together, maybe some of their stories mashing up and stuff, I find that fascinating. And I would really love to know more about that. And weirdly enough, the Medusa story, A Drop of Venom, is going to kind of blend those two things.
With the Indian legend, too. Yeah. It's very interesting.
It is super interesting. He wanted to spread his winemaking knowledge and his territory, but he had a really tough time of it because the Indians had their own magic and their own gods. Please, I want a story about these two kind of fighting each other. I think that would be so interesting. He adopted a new sacred animal, the leopard, and wore a leopard skin cape. Which makes sense because of the leopard print shirt he's always wearing.
Yeah.
And he ended up becoming the last of the major gods of Olympus. All very exciting. So that kind of prophecy came true. He ended up being a major god. That's about that for Dionysus. I feel like I knew a lot of the bigger points there, but like learned some things that I wasn't aware of. And he's one of the few that I think I would really like to dive into again at some point, because I hit like most of the major stories, but even in Percy's depictions of him in that book, he was like, yeah, so he went off and did this, that's a story for another time. And I don't think that was necessarily in that book. It might have been in the Greek Heroes book, which I didn't get into for this, but I would be really interested in more of what Dionysus gets up to.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, in Percy Jackson, I didn't write down, like, all of his appearances because, like I said, he's in it a lot more than the other ones. And I think at this point, if you guys have been following along, you know, we've seen enough of him. We kind of know when he shows up.
Yeah.
He is one of the better-known gods. He's the director of Camp Half-Blood, forced to spend 100 years there after chasing after an off-limits nymph, which, you know, again, the fling, poor Ariadne.
Yeah.
Only, and he's only allowed to drink Diet Coke because Zeus took away his ability to drink wine. Must be so horrible.
Yeah.
His appearance is that he has a chubby face, a red nose, curly black hair, watery blue bloodshot eyes. And I'm trying to think of, like, Mandzukas. And I feel like, I mean, he's not really a chubby guy, but, like, the curly black hair, you know, give him, like, a little bit more of a ruddy appearance and everything. I think he's really going to fit that role so well.
Yeah, I do. I mean, not just his personality, but I think they're going to be able to do a lot with his appearance,
too. Yeah, and he's a good, like, physical actor, too. Yeah. Like, his facial expressions and stuff, I feel like he's really going to nail that down.
For sure.
He often wears a tiger-striped or leopard-print Hawaiian shirt, and he has purple running shoes, which is
a leopard print Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah. I'm assuming that's just, like, one of the button-up, like...
Yeah, but I'm also curious if there's, like, tropical flowers mixed in with the leopard print.
Or, like actual leopards and flowers.
Yeah, maybe.
It would be interesting.
That's funny.
His abilities include prowess in battle, which I think is a funny one. Like, he's just a warrior.
Yeah.
Chlorokinesis. He can grow, control, and summon plants, and he prefers grapes and strawberries, which explains the strawberry fields.
Yeah.
He can induce and cure madness. Alcokinesis, he cannot get drunk, and he can conjure any drink and can turn people to animals into beverages. He, Blackjack and Percy, think he was going to turn them into like a Merlot or something like that. Cabernet, I don't remember, but he can appear wherever parties are held. That's kind of useful.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Despises the Maenads, which I did not realize that he didn't actually like them. I wonder if that has, like, mythological support, you know, like, if that's from the mythologies.
I have to say, right now, before we go any further,
puts
a whole new definition to party hopping.
That's true.
If Dionysus can literally just, like, appear at a party, and then this one's kind of dying down, so it's time to appear at another party. Sorry. Okay, I'm done now. Anyway, back to the Maenads.
Yeah, so apparently he hated them.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, but he is obliged to curse anyone who hurts or kills them. So interesting. Photokinesis, he can cause an intense purple aura. Levitation, teleportation, and pyrokinesis, he can create purple fire, which... Didn't we see purple fire in Hades' eyes? Wasn't that, like, one of his things, too?
That sounds right, yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
He can grant powers. He gave Midas his golden touch. I don't know if I knew that.
I don't think I did either.
I don't Yeah.
It makes a little bit of sense. Just thinking about, like, what Bacchus and Dionysus kind of stand for.
That yeah.
I can see how there's a loose connection with Midas getting his golden touch from them, but I didn't know that for
yeah.
sure.
And he can force transformations. He can turn people into animals, like we talked about with the dolphins and stuff like that. So, that's Dionysus in a nutshell.
Whew.
Yeah. And I feel like there's still more that I would want to learn about him, but he's a pretty interesting guy, and I think I'm very curious, especially in this last book, to kind of see where he ends up before we get into, like, Heroes of Olympus when he appears again, so.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Very interesting. But speaking of, let's talk about the last Olympian chapter 2.
Yeah, we are on to chapter 2, which is entitled, I Meet Some Fishy Relatives. With Percy blacked out on the ocean floor, he has a pretty vivid dream. He's at the top of Mount Tamalpais, where he can see Atlas holding up a swirling funnel cloud, aka this guy. Two other titans are present, and they are watching explosions and devastation in the fire. Krios, one of the titans, and the other argue a bit about which jobs they want to do for Kronos' cause. They mention a treacherous nephew in a tuxedo, which I thought was interesting, and discuss how they plan to overrun the gods and take over Olympus. Then Percy finds himself outside that pavilion that he was just in that part of the dream, and he's suddenly standing next to Nico. Nico insists that his plan is really the best and probably the only way to beat Kronos and his forces. Percy then abruptly awakes to find a presence looming over him. He at first thinks it's Beckendorf, but he quickly realizes it's Tyson, and he is laying in a bed in his father's palace underwater. Tyson is happy Percy's brain works and is sad about Beckendorf. Percy has a bit of trouble accepting that the child of Hephaestus has died, but then he hears explosions out the window, and Tyson takes him to go see Dad. Percy gets a good look at his father's domain. The palace, with its courtyards, gardens, and pavilions, is quite the sight, and would be extremely beautiful if it wasn't getting destroyed. Poseidon introduces Percy to his stepmother, Amphrite, and stepbrother, Triton. Percy offers his father his help with the ongoing fight against Oceanus, but Poseidon sends Percy back to the surface to handle that part of the fight. He also offers Percy some comfort regarding the deaths in the explosion of the Princess Andromeda. He reminds Percy that Beckendorf died a hero's death and that he shouldn't feel guilty about Charles's choice, as well as the possible deaths of the other demigods that were aboard. They made their choices, and it's not his fault. They go on to discuss that Percy has done a good thing in destroying the Princess Andromeda, delaying the battle in New York City and allowing the gods to focus on the other threats. Most importantly, Poseidon orders Percy to tell Chiron it's time for him to hear the great prophecy in its entirety. He then shoos Percy away as he takes his true godly form to do battle one-on-one with Oceanus.
Again, grateful we're doing one chapter.
Yeah, it's so funny because when I read this chapter, I didn't really like, there's not really a lot that happens. It's yeah. just Percy waking up, going to talk to his dad, and then his dad saying, okay, go to the surface.
You're kind of coming down from the explosive first chapter.
Right. But, like, it's also, there's a lot of information in this yeah. chapter, too. So it feels like there's not anything going on, but, like, at the same time, that recap was a lot longer than I thought it was going to yeah. be for this chapter. So, yeah. Anyway, I guess we should probably just start at the beginning here with Percy's dream.
Yeah, which is prophecy count number 23. I had to go back, like, 5 episodes to find out what number we were on.
I was going
to
say, it's been a little while since we had yeah. one. The ends of books tend to be prophecy light.
Right, because you're fulfilling the prophecies exactly. and you're getting to the final battles.
Exactly. So that's, yeah, that's good fun. But he basically is just watching these two titans have a conversation about what's going on, and Atlas is whining. Whatever. Atlas can whine. Just let him
yeah.
be grumpy. But, like, it was just interesting seeing them and what they were getting out of watching. I wasn't sure if they were watching the explosion of the Princess Andromeda, because at first that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But then Percy describes seeing in the fire this scene they're watching, like, buildings implode and stuff.
Yeah.
So it couldn't have been the Princess Andromeda they were watching. They were watching another attack that's going on.
Right.
And, of course, Percy doesn't know because he's been knocked out and all of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're basically just discussing their where they're going to be doing the most damage, and one of them talks about being a southern... I forget if he calls himself a southern king or something, but, okay, like, he's basically been, like, fighting in the southern hemisphere, I think, yeah, or something, and he's whining and all that.
I found the characters interesting, because you have Krios, which we don't really know much about, but I feel like he was kind of the one in charge. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the one telling the Golden Titan what to do.
Yes.
And the Golden Titan, to me, feels sort of like a precursor to Apollo, like, because he had... Percy describes him having this glow, but it's a lot harsher than Apollo's kind of warmth that he, yeah, usually has. And then, of course, you also have Atlas there, who's mad that he's not able to fight, but nobody really wants him to move from holding up the sky, because, of course, nobody wants to take that job.
Right.
So,
yeah, no, for
I'm sure. curious who Krios is and, like, what he's kind of capable of, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to see more of them. I assume Percy's probably going to have more dreams
probably
with these two in them.
This is usually a recurring thing, so yeah, this is just number one. They talk about Percy, like, the gods having taken the bait or something.
Mm-hmm.
So Percy having blown up the Princess Andromeda has kind of started a whole chain of events now, because the gods have gotten involved, their kids have gotten involved.
Yeah.
So now it's kind of like open season, and the, yeah, war has, like, truly begun.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think Percy and Beckendorf kind of discussed that they knew was probably going to happen. Like,
yeah,
they said it's time for war, like, you know. So it's interesting that that all has happened in this, like, short period of time while Percy's been... Mm-hmm. knocked out.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like their forces haven't gone up against each other before, but it was literally Luke's army invading Camp Half-Blood and them defending their territory. Now the demigods are on the offensive.
Yeah.
And that does kind of change the game a little bit.
Yeah, no, for sure. But then, without any real ending to that scene, Percy just finds himself, like, swept away and is now standing at the edge of that room he was looking in on, and he's standing next to Nico, who's looking directly at him and, mm-hmm, talking to him. So Nico is in this vision, which is a little weird, but,
yeah,
I mean, it's not the first time Percy's interacted with someone in a vision.
Oh, yeah, I mean, for sure. And I think Nico isn't just, like, in his vision. Like, that's actually Nico talking to him through his dreams,
yeah,
which is really interesting.
It's a little crazy and hard to understand at first.
Yeah, and he basically just reminds Percy of this plan we still know nothing about. Tell me the plan, Rick.
This is the plan. It's the best plan. It's,
yeah,
you know, we're gonna... It's come on, Percy, you know.
Yeah.
Tell us what it is.
I wanna know.
Yeah. Let us in on the thing. Anyway. And then Percy wakes up, and he, at first, you can tell he doesn't really know where he is, but he quickly figures out that he's underwater. Tyson lets him know that he's in Poseidon's palace, and this is Percy's first time really being in,
yeah,
Poseidon's realm and where he lives and spends, yeah, most of his time.
And it stinks because he's super excited, but he hates the reason why he's there, and,
yeah,
I totally understand that. But I kind of shared him in his excitement, because he was really bummed before that Tyson got to go down and work in the forges, and Percy's never been invited there, and I think we kind of find out why, but... or at least part of the reason,
yeah,
why. But, yeah, I was like, oh, this is exciting, except for everything's blowing up and falling apart.
Yeah, like, he's talking about the gardens and all of these beautiful, like, trellises and things that have all of these anemones and sea plants and life. And it just looks really great. But then it's also being blown up because Oceanus has been attacking for a long time, as we know. And it's looking a little rough.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Tyson marches Percy to Poseidon, Percy's not exactly sure which Poseidon he's going to be looking at, because he's seen his dad as, like, the goofy guy in the Tommy Bahama clothes.
Yeah.
And he's also seen him on Olympus,
mm-hmm,
like, in, like, official god mode. So
full,
I think,
regalia.
Yeah, so he's like, I don't quite know what I'm looking for. And this guy that he meets is a little more run down,
yeah,
than he's seen him before. He's not the jovial guy he sees on the beach, but he's also not the big kahuna up in Mount Olympus. And we quickly find out that Poseidon's appearance is a reflection of his domain, his mm-hmm. realm. And since Oceanus has been doing such damage to the area, that's why he looks so run down, which I just thought was really cool.
I thought that was so interesting, too. One, because he's basically been fighting Oceanus for, like, a year. Mm-hmm. So this is a year's worth of being run down. And the fact that he doesn't necessarily have control over that, that, like, it's kind of just something that he accepts. I'm sure he could change his visage if he wanted to, probably. But like, this is just kind of how it is, and he accepts that. And I think it's kind of nice for other people to see that, to be like, oh, okay, maybe we're in trouble. Like, maybe we need to step up to the plate a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the fact that we'll get into this when we get into Heroes of Olympus, but when they also switch between their Greek and Roman personas, the fact that they can't necessarily control that mm-hmm. is so interesting to me, in the same way that it's interesting that the gods need mortals to survive.
Yeah.
Because even though they're super powerful, they still rely on that worship mm-hmm. to have that sort of power.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's all very intricate and interesting. Yeah, for sure. I also thought it was really weird that Oceanus is sending, like, all these monsters, and, like, Poseidon's like, dude, he's throwing stuff my way I thought was gone a long time ago. And, like, he's Poseidon. He's the god of the sea. Mm-hmm. You know, you think he would know where everything is under the sea and all of that. Like, Percy, when he touches seawater, instantly knows where he is and all of that. So I just think it's interesting that there's creatures in the sea that even Poseidon's like, yeah, I forgot about that.
It's a good reminder that the Olympus gods are not the oldest creatures in Greek mythology, that the Titans are older and can be stronger than them, and that it took a lot the first time to defeat them. To do it again is going to be very difficult. And I also wanted to point out that Poseidon has mermaid soldiers.
Yeah.
And I really liked them because Percy describes them as having neon green eyes, which, you know, I'm already on board with that because that's my favorite color, blue skin, and shark teeth. And I always go back to how J.K. Rowling described mermaids in the Harry Potter series, because they're not these beautiful creatures. They're very fish-like, very scary in a lot of ways. And I kind of love when we see mermaids in a different light. There's this really good book series by Michael Buckley called Undertow, and it's also about mermaids, and he kind of describes mermaids differently too. And I haven't actually finished the series, but it was, when I read it, like, one of my favorite books of the year that I had read. So I highly recommend that if you're into mermaids, and especially mermaids being a little bit creepier, because I just always find that really interesting. It goes against what we see in a lot of media.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Okay, so once Percy actually gets to his father and starts to kind of talk to him, they have a bit of a discussion about the war and exactly what's happening under the seawater, and talks about the monsters and all of that. But it quickly kind of pivots to Poseidon helping Percy and kind of helping remind him that war has begun and that there are going to be losses. And, you know, Percy specifically is really torn up about Beckendorf, as, you know, we all are. Mm-hmm. And Poseidon makes a point to remind him that, you know, Beckendorf made a sacrifice. He did it to save people. You know, he knew what he was getting into. It's not Percy's fault, because Percy's blaming himself. I left him there. He couldn't have survived the leap off the boat like I did. You know, I shouldn't have done that. All of that stuff. And it's not Percy's fault. And I don't think Beckendorf blamed him either. You know, like, Beckendorf knew they were in a bad spot, and this was the best answer to the whole problem.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was really nice that Poseidon, like, took a minute to kind of talk to Percy about all this, because he's fighting a battle for his life and for his kingdom, and he's, you know, he's fighting a titan, and he's worn down and all of that, but he still made a moment to have this conversation because he can see what's already wearing on Percy.
Yeah, I think that this scene with Poseidon is so interesting, and there are so many different levels to it, because you're right. On the one hand, like, they've got monsters attacking, his entire palace is crumbling down, and he does stop and talk to Percy and Tyson about all of this. You've also got his wife, Amphitrite, who doesn't like Percy because he's the son of another another woman, which is not his fault. He literally could not control that, but that's kind of a theme in Greek mythology.
Yeah.
You know, go back to Hera if you forget anything about that.
Yeah.
And then you also have Triton, which is Poseidon's other son. He has a double mermaid tail, which I find very interesting. He's got to be very fast in the water then, right. I would think. He is kind of a douche. Like, he's not a super nice guy, but whatever. So you have, like, these familial complexities going on. You have the war going on, and then you have Poseidon being run down and also talking about the war. And I really appreciated that Rick took the time to get into the complexities of war. In that, you know, we're talking about fallen soldiers like Beckendorf being one of many. You know, we're very sad about Beckendorf because we knew him even just a little bit. But Percy looks around and sees all these mermaid soldiers dead and in their graves and other ones injured and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, it sucks that Beckendorf died, but, like, he's one of many at this point. And also how those demigods on the ship, those deaths weren't any easier just because they chose a side. Like, Poseidon kind of tells them they made their choice. They chose to align themselves with Kronos. This is the price that you pay. And Percy kind of goes, so? That doesn't make it any easier. It doesn't make it any better. Yeah. I still wish that hadn't happened. And for a children's book to kind of really hit some of those messages home very loud and clear. Like, he is not really pulling punches. And I don't think he makes Percy a hero in this moment. Neither does he make him a bad guy. But it's like, an impossible choice was made, and I have to live with those consequences. And it's super not black and white. And I really appreciate him kind of putting those layers into a children's book.
Yeah, I love Percy, and this fits right into his character that he's like, maybe not all of those demigods died. Like, I told them early enough, maybe they got into a boat and they got away. I don't know. I didn't see it. I fell into the ocean and blacked out and passed out, you know. So, like, I like that he's thinking about this, like, okay, maybe they saw what was going on. Maybe they saw another side. Maybe they're gonna join us, or maybe they'll stay out of the battle or whatever. So I do like that Percy being Percy, even in this conversation where they're, you know, addressing war and starting to kind of get into a war and a warrior's mindset, he still is like, but maybe they survive.
Yeah. I kind of hope that one of the demigods did survive and comes back and joins Percy's side and is like, you saved my life. And,
right.
You know, I don't remember if that happens, but it would be cool if it did.
I don't know if you remember me, but I was that kid in the hallway.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize what was going on. And
yeah, I did not know better, and now I do.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Just saying.
We are also very optimistic.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes naively so. But, you know, whatever. So, yeah, they have this, you know, intense conversation, and Poseidon is battling monsters at the same time. He's blasting, you know, squid into smithereens and sending them off and whatever. Then he basically says, Percy, you have to return to camp. Because Percy wants to stay. He wants to help fight. And Tyson is even like, Percy's good with a sword, Dad. Mm-hmm. Like, let him stay. And he's like, no. And Tyson, you have to get back to the forges. And Poseidon and Percy have a very small, short little moment where Percy says, like, you know, you should let Tyson fight. And he's like, no, I have to protect him. Like, mm-hmm. Poseidon is like, no, he's young. I need to protect him. That's why he's at the forges and not down here. And it's just a moment where I think we get a lot more of who Poseidon is. Mm-hmm. Like, so many of these gods seem like they don't care about their offspring. Like, Zeus is, he's having kids right and left, and it doesn't seem like he really puts a lot of effort and care into them. But then, like, Poseidon, it seems like he really does. He has more affection for his kids, even Tyson, who's a cyclops and not a demigod, necessarily. I really liked the complexity of all of that. You know, it's really cool.
It's nice to see him as a fatherly character.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, he sends Percy back to camp and says, it's time. you need to tell Chiron that it's time for you to hear the entirety of the Great Prophecy.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sorry, but the biggest thing to happen in this chapter.
It is. And I'm okay with that, but, like, can you believe that it's been so long since we first heard that prophecy? And, like, I legit forgot that we didn't know the whole thing.
Right? Yeah. Like, Percy knows bits and pieces, but he does not have the full picture, and it's time. He needs to know what he's getting into. I mean, his birthday is not far off, and he is going to be making a choice. And I also love that in this, he's like, what if this is the choice, Dad?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a very kid response, but it's like, you haven't even heard the whole thing. Trust me, it's not the choice. Like, get out of here. Percy kind of, he zips off and the current takes him away and he's headed back to camp. So that's where we leave him in this chapter.
I'm excited to get to camp. I'm excited to hear the prophecy. I'm excited to see Annabeth again. It's going to be really sad when he doesn't return with Beckendorf. That's going to be a whole lot of stuff. And also, we should remind everyone that Poseidon also does mention, hey, you've got a spy in the camp. Don't forget about that.
Yes.
We should maybe, you know, try to find that person.
Right. We need to figure out who's telling on us and, you know, kick them out. Anyway. Yeah. So, yeah. No, it's not an action-packed chapter, and there's not, like, a whole lot going on, but it's a really big, interesting combo between
and
father and son.
Good character moments between those two, especially.
And Tyson, too. I mean, he has some moments where he's like, yeah, Dad, you know, like...
Yeah, but I think we see more of Poseidon and his personality and his character in this scene than we have in the four previous books combined.
Probably,
which I find interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely interesting. Okay, so let's do our favorite quotes. Karen, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so this was basically when Percy was like, I don't think it did, but, like, could it be possible that the boat exploding killed Kronos? And Poseidon was basically like, no, you're not going to be that lucky. And then it says, Tyson put his arm around me. If anyone else had tried that, I would have pushed him away. But Tyson was too big and stubborn. He hugged me whether I wanted it or not. And at that point, I was, like, tearing up a little bit. And he goes, not your fault, brother. Kronos does not explode good. Next time, we will use a big stick. And it reminded me that he carved an excellent stick for Percy for his birthday. And I was like, oh, my God.
Aww.
Yeah.
He's just too pure.
He is. He's so pure. He's the definition of a cinnamon roll, and I love it so much.
We love you, Tyson. Mine is also a Percy and Tyson moment because, you know, when Percy first wakes up, he just kind of, like, sees this shadowy figure over top of him, and he goes, Beckendorf? And there's really no answer, and then his vision clears, and he goes, Tyson? And Tyson looks down at him and goes, yay, your brain works! And I just, it kills me. It's, oh, I died. I was like, his brain does work, Tyson. Yeah. Good job.
He's so cute.
It was really cute. Okay, and then your favorite moment?
Basically, Poseidon trying to be a good dad to his three very different children. He kind of handles them all in different ways. He understands how they're feeling, and even if he gives them advice that they don't necessarily like, he's trying to do the best by each of them. And I was just like, wow, I kind of wish you were like this, you know, all the time. And you could have been, like, in Percy's life when he was younger and stuff like that. And it's just not, it wasn't in the cards because he's a god. But, you know, I have a little bit more respect for Poseidon now and everything that he's trying to do.
Agreed. For sure. Mine was Tyson taking such good care of Percy when they found him on the bottom of the ocean the day before and brought him home and looked after him while, you know, still getting his forge duties done.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really sweet that Tyson took him under his wing. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. If you like revisiting your favorite canceled and cult classic shows, consider tuning into Rewatchable, which has covered series like Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy and Angel, and many more. Most recently, we've also discussed all four Matrix movies. We also have Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that features our biggest hypes and gripes in fandom and life, and we even post interviews with our favorite creators. Lastly, we also have Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which has previously discussed every episode of the show, conducted many interviews with the cast and crew, and will be covering the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can email your long-form thoughts to us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help, and we want everyone to find us and join in the Percy Jackson fun, so please do so. You can leave us questions and comments or ideas for content or episodes you might want to see in any of these places. We really love hearing from you guys. We got some feedback this week. I will turn it over to Karen to address the first bit of feedback from Nicholas Haman.
Yes, this is from Twitter at Haman Nicholas, who says, I liked the one chapter approach this time. It probably would have been a jump scare to get a moving on to chapter two after that nice chunk. The limit will probably be essential for King Chronicles when the chapters get even longer. Maybe Heroes of Olympus could go back to 2 chapters due to them being shorter. Could just be that they can vary wildly in length. Pretty sure there's one, the Lost Hero chapter, that's literally 5 paragraphs long, lol. That would be a race to the favorite moment. That's true. We might have to battle it out for that one. I think I remember which chapter he's talking about, but I'm not entirely sure because it has been a while. That's good to know that the Kane Chronicles chapters are maybe a little bit longer. So
this might be a good
idea. I gotta tell you, we're at like an hour right now for this episode and we're at the end. I'm very proud of ourselves. So I'm really digging this one chapter a week approach.
For right now, I think it's the best solution. It's just a little less pressure filled. We're not worried about the episodes being really long for you guys either. Mm-hmm. So I do like the choice. I think we made a good decision.
Yeah.
We also got a mention in the Instagram story. I'm terrible at social media. Just smile and nod. From Laura Bookish Life 1. She sent us a picture of her puppy laying on the floor, still in his little harness. And she says, my exhausted puppy after a walk. Thanks at Prophecy Radio Podcast for joining us. And that's just really cute. Yeah. It's a cute puppy.
We love pictures of puppies. Just saying.
Or kitties.
Yeah. Any animals, really.
I'll take like them.
Lizards, too.
Yeah.
I like lizards.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for sending it. It's really cute, and we're glad that we got to accompany you on your walk
and
give you some fun things to listen to while you get
also,
moving.
Also, I like your shoes.
Oh, yeah, they're cute. I see some teal.
Yeah.
I'm always about the teal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, feel free to reach out to us. Even fun things like your picture of your puppy, we will love to see that. And next week, we're not entirely sure what we're going to be talking about yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's some possibilities in the works, but we don't want to nail anything down too specific. So stick to social media and we will let you know what we're going to talk about. Probably Twitter. So that's probably the easiest way to get, you'll know first. That's for sure. But yeah, until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.